Well, hello everybody. Thanks for asking me to speak. It's been a long time since I've spoke on Zoom, but it's always a privilege to speak at a meeting. Normally I would have a tie on. My day kind of was a little bit strange today. Everything was supposed to start and finish about an hour before it all did today. So I apologize for that. Where to start? I guess first and foremost, my name's Josh, an alcoholic. Let's see. I guess we'll start with what my day's like today. So today, this morning, so far, I woke up this morning and there's this group chat filled with all these guys from my home group, and every morning we send out things that we're grateful for in this group chat. That's one of the first things I do every morning is send that in, and then I get out of bed and I pray on my knees, which is not something that I've done my whole sobriety. It's not something that I ever thought I would do, but it's something that's served me well as of late. Right after that, generally speaking, one of my sponsees who's also in that group chat sees me send out what I'm grateful for. Then he calls me. I used to have my sponsees call me at the end of the day, but my schedule just works better if I have them call me in the beginning of the day. And that combination of things is really important for me as well, because for me, it's really important that I get out of the way first thing in the morning. If I don't, like, it's really easy for my mind and everything to get away from me first thing in the morning, and then it sets the tone for the whole day. So if I do that, generally speaking, I have a pretty peaceful day. After that, I went and I walked. There's this park by my house. I walked there for a little while. I usually go to the gym every day or do something physical every day. I've always had a lot of energy, and if I do that, it helps to first thing in the morning, it helps to keep everything sort of at bay. So then I met with my foreman to pay him and talk to him about the projects we have this week. And normally we meet like at a job site, but the job that we were going to do today got pushed back. So we met at a restaurant. He doesn't speak any English, and he was like, "Meet me at this restaurant." So I met him. There's like this strip of restaurants, and he didn't tell me which one. He sent me the address, and the address takes you to the strip. There's like three different Mexican restaurants in this strip. So I like walked in there and like waited for him, and it was like this weird thing, and like he was late. That's fine. He's always late. I'm always late. It's not a big deal. But it kind of pushed back my day. So I handled that, and then I was gonna speak and drive. And my girlfriend, I told her I was going to do that because we have plans today. And she said, "No, why don't you pull over and park? I don't have the best driving record. I've been in a few car accidents. Probably for the best that I actually park." So I'm parked at a rest stop on 77, for those of you that know where that is, which I think is probably one person. So now I'm talking to you guys. So, that's kind of like what most of my days look like, more or less, is I wake up in the morning and I try to put Alcoholics Anonymous first. I do the things that I have to do, work-wise or life-wise, and then I try to let Alcoholics Anonymous take a priority. And obviously, I have to maintain my relationship with my girlfriend and my business now. But it hasn't always been like that. There's I guess like the biggest thing that's different now compared to like what the rest of my life has been or what my life was before Alcoholics Anonymous is, in all of this, there's like a sense of peace, and like a sense of calm, which I never had before. And I was born in a city, I guess it's probably I was born in Cleveland. A couple years after that, my dad got sober when I was around, I believe, two or three. And I don't ever remember him drinking or anything like that. My parents were together till I was about five, and they got divorced. My mom moved into this little apartment. It was this tiny little apartment, and I remember that very vividly. It was like I think it was like a 1 or 2 bedroom apartment, and I think she was sleeping in the living room. I remember like that change being like something that was, I remember that being like a big change, but it wasn't really a problem or anything. And she met my stepfather shortly thereafter, and they like she like accidentally got pregnant. They had a shotgun wedding, and he was a sick dude. He was an opiate addict, and he never really like I think like the gist of like who he was and his demons or he just never, I don't think he ever had the opportunity to heal. I think he suffered a lot of trauma in his life, and he was never afforded the opportunity to heal or see something or do something different. So and we bared a lot of that us kids, and we moved to a new city with him and my mom, and I remember moving to that city and feeling like the oddball and the odd one out, and like things were always kind of stressful at home with him, and my brother was born with Down syndrome and a couple other disabilities, so there's a lot going on at home, you know, my stepfather and his conditions and my brother and his conditions, and I went from being the youngest and only boy to now being like the middle boy, and that was an adjustment for me as well, and because of my brother's conditions. My mom couldn't really work. My stepdad worked, and he was the breadwinner, but he also had a pretty serious opiate habit. So, we didn't really have a lot of money, you know, so I'm this new kid in a new school, and I don't know, I'm probably like six or seven, I don't know, somewhere around there at this point. And, you know, I feel kind of out of place, you know, somewhere around the same period of time, I started being sexually abused as well, and you know, so there's like a lot of this stuff going on, and I don't really feel safe at home. I don't really feel safe at school. I don't really feel safe in myself. I'm kind of always like anxious and filled with fear and sort of unknown, just discomfort. I was just always uncomfortable. I remember from a very young age, like that feeling of being uncomfortable. I was always sweaty. You know, so that was like always sort of what my life was like at a very young age, and I don't say any of that because like I don't think like those particular things like make me an alcoholic or make me a drug addict or any of those things. I think that those things were contributing factors to like my ability to lie, my ability to like mask my emotions, my ability to put on a face, my ability to like push things down and keep secrets and harbor resentments and all of those things. So you know, I with my dad being in recovery and my exposure to Alcoholics Anonymous, and my dad has always been transparent about his disease and what that means for me genetically and like the predisposition and all of those things, and my stepdad's condition with him being an addict, and people had told me and warned me forever, excuse me, that I was probably like there was probably a good chance that I was probably going to be affected. So you know, I was like, well, I guess I'll just never do that. I'll never drink, I'll never do drugs. Both my parents were smokers too, and that was something I was never gonna do either. And because of like everything that was going on at home, I had like a long leash, you know. I could pretty much free rein. My mom, her hands were always so full with my brother and my stepdad and my two older sisters too, that I could kind of slide through the cracks, and I took full advantage of that. So, I spent a lot of time like running around the neighborhood kids. It's like a lower middle class, as a poor-ish neighborhood, you know. And I found very quickly, like I found my people, right? I found people who were like me, grew up like me, you know, had the same stuff going on, whatever. And, you know, they were cool and they looked out for me, you know, and I started rolling with these older kids and, these older kids, I remember very distinctly, like, I remember like hanging out with these kids and they were smoking cigarettes and I was like, oh, well, I guess I'll do that, you know, and I started smoking cigarettes with them, and I remember Somebody was like, "Hey, you want to try smoking weed?" And I was like, and I remember like it was there's a big book talks about I could sense I was being none too smart. I had like all those ideas of like, "Hey, you should be careful. Everybody told you about all this stuff and like all that." I was like, "Well, yeah, we'll see. We'll see what it's about." And I think I was about 10 or 11 at the time, and I remember smoking with them, and I remember pretty much immediately feeling like all that discomfort, all that uneasiness, all of that stuff kind of like go away. And a couple things happened for me that day that were really important. One of which is I realized that everybody had lied to me about drinking and drugs, and that this was exactly what I was missing. It was exactly what I needed. And two, I was going to do this as much as I could. And if they had lied to me about doing drugs, what else did they? I mean, they probably lied about drinking too, right? So later that same week, those same kids were there was like a house party, and I remember this kid had like this warm Coors under his bed, and he'd been hiding it. You know how kids are, you gotta hide it, steal it, can't ever have anything cold or anything good. So, but I remember like drinking that, and we left his house and like went to this party, and I remember like as I the more and more that I drank, the better I felt, right? The more social I was, the more I felt free, the more all of those things came to be. And I ended up blacking out and like throwing up in the yard, and that was like pretty normal. That same scenario you can repeat over and over again till I eventually stopped, but that's what my drinking looked like, right? And I didn't know any other way to drink. That's how I drank the first time, that's how I drank the last time. There was no deviation from that. I was never trying to have a couple of beers. I was never, in the big book it says you're seldom mildly intoxicated, and that was me. I was always, if I was going to drink, I was going to drink, that's how I thought from the beginning and until the end. So, obviously, like being a kid, it's not sustainable to drink and do drugs like that. But that's how I did it. That's how I wanted to do it. Like I said, I had no desire to do anything any other way. So, and like I said, I felt like I had found the solution for all these problems that I had. So, things kind of carried on with that. It did progress. Like I wouldn't, I wasn't able to like continue to hang out with the same people. I had to like continuously find shadier and shadier people that were willing to like do what I was willing to do, and wanted to party the way I wanted to party, and were willing to break into places and break into cars and, do all that stuff. And I went from being like a B-ish student to like trying not to fail and trying not to get kicked out of school, and like perfect. I appreciate you keeping my place. Yeah, I went from being like a B student and like generally speaking, like respectful to like more or less being like a menace and like trying not to get expelled. Or kicked out on a pretty regular basis. I learned too, aside from just drinking and partying, that like I could also get a lot of attention for being funny and unruly. And I really thrived in that. I really embraced that. So, over time I would get some like disciplinary stuff, I would get kicked out of school or whatever. I would get suspended or, and I would always like call my dad and be like, "Hey, I got into some trouble. I should probably like go to those meetings, And it was all just like just an act, really. I didn't want to like get sober at that point, but I knew like if I went to meetings and like did that, like the heat would die down, and that's what I did. That was like ultimately the goal was to like continue on, and in order to do that, sometimes I would have to let the heat die down. So, And that's kind of how I did things, right? I was always shooting an angle. I was always manipulating. My mom, given her experience with my dad, my stepdad, and Al-Anon and all of those things, she was not having any of what I was doing. And she was not afraid to say things like, "Well, you're not going to live here and do that stuff." And I'd kind of bounce around from place to place, and all that stuff seemed normal to me. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't mind being out and about. There was this girl. There's this girl who would let me sleep under her bed. Her dad worked nights, and she'd let me sleep under her bed. I don't know why I always remember this, but and I did it pretty regularly. I'd been like more or less kicked out of my mom's house, and so I would sleep under her bed, and it was a sweet setup, And one night I got too drunk and I threw up and pissed under her bed, and she politely asked me not to sleep under her bed anymore. And so in between her house and my mom's house, there was this church, and this church had this like paper recycling bin. And I would sleep there. I slept there a number of times, and like there was like a really odd like sort of moment of clarity thing at one point where I was waking up in the morning, and like there's paper recycling bins like behind a church, and there's like the playground. You can see the playground from like the recycling bin, and like you open up the door, right, and you can see like all these kids and like their parents doing normal stuff, and you're like trying to like plan your exit out of this recycling bin without these people seeing that you're sleeping in the recycling bin. And I remember like thinking about it one day, like, this isn't really how I plan things to go. But like, again, all that stuff was kind of par for the course, right? Like, I wanted to do what I wanted to do, and I was going to do that, and I didn't really care like what got in the way, or like the cost of doing business. And that was a lot of like how I looked at that stuff, which was the cost of doing business. So fast forward, all these things that like I used to drink to escape, right? Like the feelings of like loneliness, the feelings of like being different, like the sort of like the social element of it, like all of those things that like in the beginning were like very alluring for me. They weren't working anymore. Now at this point, I was more or less just pretty much drinking and using alone, and I couldn't keep friends. I would steal from you couldn't trust me in your home. You couldn't trust me around your stuff. You couldn't trust me around your girlfriend. It didn't matter. I wasn't welcome, right? So, all of those things started to come back, and at this point, like even more so, and more or less, like drinking didn't do what it used to do for me. It didn't take those things away, much anymore. And I was in a kind of a helpless spot, but I remember going to meetings or with my dad and talking to people, and I remember like very distinctly the idea of like, or like the memory of being like, yeah, these people are cool. They think like I think. They have stories similar to mine. Like, they drink like I drink, and like I think like they understand what I'm about here. But I remember also at that same time being like, well, but there's no way I'm ready to give this stuff up yet, regardless of whether or not I knew it to be true. At that point I was pretty depressed, and I'd reached out to my dad, and I was like, "Hey, I don't know." And it wasn't like the other times where I'd like had some trouble or anything like that. I'd gone to meetings with him and talked to him about meetings to go to, and I would go and get white chips and stick around for a little while and put some time together. Just kind of kicking the can down the road, more or less. But I was never really like willing to do anything different. There was like one night where like things had I remember very distinctly at that point, I was trying like very vividly, or like very I was trying hard. No, I don't know. I was putting a lot of effort into like controlling the amount I took in, and the things that the substances that I took and whatever. And I remember a friend of mine was having a party, and I remember I had summer school in the morning. My mom was out of town, and I had to take care of the horses. It's a totally different story, but there's horses at some point involved in all of this. And I remember I was like, okay, well, I'm gonna go to this party. I'm just gonna like smoke a little bit of weed and everything will be fine. I'm just gonna take it easy, go say what's up, I'll get out of there. So long story short is I end up blacking out and like I always do, and like coming in and out of blackouts, like running and running away from people and whatever, all these things. And I go to summer school in the morning and I'm in and out of a blackout in summer school and like falling asleep and the whole thing. So I come home in the afternoon and there's like this card, there's a detective's card on my door from the city that I lived in. I was still sweating out the night before and I didn't really put much thought into it, but I knew it was something I was gonna have to deal with. And so there's this kid who I was in summer school with who had been a friend of mine, and I lived on this 4-lane road, and he was driving by and he sticks his head out of the window. His friend's driving and he sticks his head out of the window. He starts yelling at me and he pulls in the driveway next to me. He's trying to fight me. I can't figure out why. I'm like I said, I'm still like trying to sweat out the night before, more or less still under the influence to an extent. And I'm trying to figure out why he's trying to fight me. And he's like, well, you tried to rape my girlfriend last night. And like, I don't have any recollection of any of this going on. And I was in no position for like any sort of real physical confrontation, and he kind of spared me of that. But I remember like the way I felt when he said all that to me, and the complete like just not knowing like what was true and what wasn't, and that level of powerlessness. It was huge for me. I don't think I'll ever forget that. It was tremendous. It was a tremendous feeling. That was a lot. There was a lot to process, and then I got to go to it's the middle of July. I had to go clean these horse stalls, it's like 2 o'clock in July, and I'm cleaning up these horse stalls, and I'm throwing up in the empty stall, and it feels like it takes 6 years to clean these horse stalls. I'm just dying, and I remember I sat down on this hay bale and I was praying, and I've always had an interesting relationship with God. I've always believed in it, but to that point and probably for a little while after that, I just kind of thought that God hated me or had forgotten about me or some semblance of that sort of thinking. And I sat down on this hay bale and I was like, I don't know what the fuck is going on here. I can't keep doing what I'm doing, and later that day I go home, my sister takes me to the police station, and I would like break people's windows when I was drunk. It was just this thing I would do. I'd run around and throw rocks and stuff at people's windows. It was a pastime of ours. And I had done that, and somebody had told the police that it was me, and I made up some lie about how I was dating this girl and she cheated on me. I was mad. It's a whole big thing, right? I lied to the police. And they're like, all right, well, the owner of the property says if you clean it up and pay for the window, he's not going to press charges. So I was like, all right, cool. That's sweet. And that's honestly like kind of how my life went. I was always getting lucky. So I went over there and I was going to clean it up later that day. And the guy was like, hey, man, want you to take a look in there. And so I did, and there was like a crib on the other side of the window, and the rock that I had thrown in the glass was in the crib. And he's like, my daughter slept in my room last night, but if you hadn't, things would be different. And like the weight of all those things really kind of hit me at once. I'd really always just kind of like stayed with the old like standby, like it's only affecting me, and my drinking only affects me, and like, it's my life to burn to the ground if I want to, like that sort of thinking. But like the weight of that evening and the weight of like the effect that I had that the world wasn't safe when I was drinking, was inescapable. So I called my dad, and he had since moved to Florida, and I was like, I don't know what to do, man. And it was different from all the other times, and he said, well, somebody will be there to pick you up, and there's this guy named Tony who came and picked me up and took me to a meeting, and
Tony would become my first sponsor, and he would drive. Well, I don't know, you guys probably don't know the distances, but he would drive like a half an hour to my house, a half an hour to a meeting, half an hour back to my house, and then a half an hour back to his house, like 4 nights a week. And he taught me a lot of things. He picked me up. We went to meetings early. We stayed late. We broke down the meeting, and I cleaned everything up. And man, I started to make friends. And like when I was getting sober, I didn't know how to behave in meetings. I didn't know how to interact with people. I didn't know how to do any of those things, and I was hard to be around. I've always been high energy, and I, like I said, I just didn't know how to behave. So, for him to like take me under his wing that way, I'm still tremendously grateful for that. So, I start to stay sober. I start to make friends in the program, and I start to be honest with people about what's going on and what I feel. And, I remember like looking at the steps and like talking to him about the steps and whatever. And I was like, I can do like 1, 2, and 3. Like, that's probably pretty easy, but like, I'm not touching that fourth step. And I had kind of expressed that to people. They're like, well, just keep bringing your body, right? Your mind will follow, like that whole thing. I was like, okay, cool, whatever. And I'd been sober for like 3 months, and this is the only time I'd ever wanted to stay sober, because I was scared. But I still wanted to stay sober, and I'd started to like experience that I could stay sober and have like a decent go at things. And this kid that I was going to school with was having a party, and I think it was like his birthday or something. Excuse me. And I was like, well, I'll go over there. I texted my sponsor. I was like, I'm going to go over there and say happy birthday to these kids and, be on my way. And then I shut my phone off so my sponsor couldn't tell me not to go. And I went there, and I ended up getting high. And then the police came, and they cuffed me up and called my sister. And, it was a whole big thing. But ultimately, nothing ever came from it. Like, there's no charges or anything. But I learned a very important lesson that night, and it's not that like Alcoholics Anonymous for me, like, it doesn't work just because I want it. You know what I mean? I have to want it, and it's very important. But like, I can't do 85% of Alcoholics Anonymous and expect to get the results. Like, for me, I have to do all of it. And that was very important for me, because like I said, it was the first time I ever wanted to stay sober, and had really been doing any sort of real work to stay sober. So, I came back, and like reluctantly, I started the steps over, and I reluctantly wrote my fourth and did my fifth, and like it wasn't half as bad as I thought it was going to be, and went through the rest of the steps. And I started to like build a life in sobriety. I got a job, which I had never had before. I had like real friends that I'd never had before. I had like a sense of peace. I was still crazy. I was a lot for a lot of years. It took me a long time to calm down. And but I remember I'd been sober for like 2.5 or 3 years, and I called my sponsor, and I was like, hey man, I don't know what's going on with me. I still feel weird. I still feel like something's missing. I don't know what's going on. And he was like, what about those amends? Was there any amends that you'd missed? And the only amend that I had talked to him about not making was that woman that I had mentioned earlier, because I didn't know how to handle that. And he said, well, why don't you ask God if that's something you should do to put her in your path? And I was like, all right, well, I guess so. And so I did, and I swear to God, this is a true story, but it seems ridiculous. But I did, and then the next day, I started my first day of my college semester, and she was in my psychology class, and like I didn't know what to do with that, and I was like, I like tried to avoid it. I called my sponsor, and I was like, I don't know if that was like for sure, if that's like what I meant. And he was like, well, hey man, you asked. You know what I mean? You got to have faith that like this is where you're supposed to be, and this is what you're supposed to do. And I said, okay. And the next day, I like went up to her, and I was shaking out of my skin. It was by far the hardest amendment I'd ever made. And I walked up to her, and I like essentially like had the conversation with her, and she was like, what are you talking about? I like repeated it, and she was like, oh no, I just told my boyfriend that because like I don't want him to be mad at me for cheating on him. I was like, oh, good. And I was mad at first, you know, and then like I like started to realize that like I had stayed sober, like I had needed that kind of fear. I had needed that kind of like realization about like what I'm capable of, like when I'm drinking. I had needed that to stay sober. And by that point, I had stayed sober long enough to like build a life in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was very secure in my program, and I was sure that I was in the right place, and I was sure that Alcoholics Anonymous was for me, and I didn't have any doubts, you know. And in the book, Drop the Rock, it talks about how our defects of character can like help other people, and like I was mad at that woman, but she saved my life, and like I didn't hold on to that resentment for very long. And I certainly don't now, which is sweet. And you know, after that, like there's been like a bunch of like notable things that have happened. There's been a bunch of hard times and sobriety for me. You know, my mom got sick, and she got better, and then she got sick again, and then she passed, and I got to participate in that. I got to be there, and I got to like support and like help manage and do all those things. And like it was really cool. Like there's a situation where when hospice comes in, they generally speaking send in a social worker too. And I was at work, and both my sisters were there with my mom and the social worker, and they were talking about everything, and they were like, or no, I was at a meeting, and the social worker was like, "Where's your brother? What's he up to?" And like, "Well, he's at a meeting, you know, he's in recovery, blah blah blah." And the social worker was like, "Oh, is that something like we should be concerned about, given like everything that's going on?" And like without hesitation, they were both like, no, it's that's where he needs to be, as people make sure he's solid in that." And I have a home group Wednesday nights called Half Measures, and like throughout that whole process, like I would just go there and like just pour it on him, you know. I would just cry every week throughout that whole process. It was difficult. It was the hardest thing I've ever walked through, because that's what it was. It wasn't a quick thing. It wasn't. It's not like it one day she was gone. It took months, and it was a hard months. But there was a point in time where, you know, she once she knew she was terminal, she was like, "Well, I'm not going to quit smoking now," and I don't blame her. And we would sit on her back porch and drink coffee and smoke cigarettes, and there's a morning where we were sitting out there, and she like thanked me for being able to face it with her. And like that's really crazy, you know, for me, because like before Alcoholics Anonymous, like I didn't really face anything. And like Alcoholics Anonymous taught me how to do that stuff. And you know, so she passed, and you know, that sucked. It was a really hard time. And that's when I started praying on my knees, because I didn't know what to do. And somebody was like, "Well, now is as good a time as any, I guess, to start praying on your knees. It's not going to hurt anything." So I did, and I still do, because like it worked, I guess. You know, it's one of those things where like I've added all these things into my life, and I don't know like which one of them is the thing that's quote unquote working. So I'm not going to start taking things away to figure it out. And throughout all this, I've been very blessed with like sponsees and opportunities to be helpful and things like that, and that stuff really keeps me grounded, you know. I because I can get really caught up in like all this stuff that I got going on. I gotta do this, I gotta be here, I gotta do that, and all this stuff that like I take for granted. And I talked to one of my sponsees who was just like, "I just want to be done with IOP, and I just want to drive a car again, you know." Or like, you know, I got to go do 30 days on an old case, you know, and that stuff, that's like, that's not far from me. It's not far from me. And I take that for granted sometimes. So I thank God for that. So I guess to kind of like wrap it up, like where I'm at now, like I'm in a relationship, which like I've like struggled with women throughout my recovery. It's been an area in which like I've struggled with. And I've been in a healthy relationship now for like 4-ish, almost 5 years, and
We're gonna have a baby, which is terrifying. I'm gonna have a kid, a little boy, which is sweet. A couple of years ago, I started learning Spanish. I couldn't really tell you why. I've been in construction for a number of years, and there's a lot of people in construction who speak Spanish, and I fell in love with the language. So I like learning stuff too. So, and it's cool because like, doesn't matter how much I learn or how much, there's always more for me to learn. And like now I'm in a position, right, where like there's like my foreman like doesn't know any English. Like not even like a little bit. Like can't even ask me for stuff in English. And like we can sit down and have lunch together and talk about business and talk about projects and talk about stuff, and his family, and like it's just sweet, I get to be a member of my family today, and I get to meet with my sponsees today and do all that stuff. And like, I just have a really full life. I've just been really blessed. I've been all over the world. I went to a Spanish school in Argentina earlier this year. I went to Peru last year, been to Puerto Rico a bunch. I want to go a bunch of other places, but like, I gotta wait till I can take my son with me, I guess. I think it'd be good for him to go early, but what do I know? So I don't know. I have a really good life today, and that all starts with me putting Alcoholics Anonymous first and remembering to do all those things that I talked about in the beginning, because that's where it all starts for me. Is literally like if I don't do those things, I notice it, and an hour into my day when I'm all grumpy and resentful and I self-entitled and egotistical, like it's really easy for me to remember how things can get out of whack for me. So, I think that's all I have today. I appreciate you guys asking me. I don't know how to close it because I don't know how to do all that. So I guess I'll pass it over to you guys. But thanks for listening. Thanks for asking me to leave.